Pastor Mai, hello and welcome to this edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. The Infrastructure Minister has hit back at some of the claims surrounding an upcoming landlord registration bill. Tim Baker says misinformation has been spread about the legislation, which he's promised won't be kicked into the long grass. And should the Cabinet Office be in charge of new emergency power legislation? Law Professor Peter Edge gives his view on plans for a civil contingencies bill. A constitutional lawyer says the island should draw on its own experiences during the period of emergency powers when looking to update the law. A consultation is out asking for views on the proposed Civil Contingencies Bill. It would replace the Emergency Powers Act 1936, which was used during the island's recent response to COVID-19. Broadly, civil contingencies concern responses to emergencies, whether they be public health, natural, or otherwise. The bill moves the power to make emergency regulations from the Governor in Council, i.e. the Lieutenant Governor, acting on the advice of the Council of Ministers, to the Council of Ministers, and seeks to provide a more modern approach to emergencies, in line with the UK approach and adapted for the Isle of Man community. At least that's according to the government document which accompanies this consultation. Well, Professor Peter Edge warns that the Manx position is unique and should be treated as such. He spoke about the proposals to John Moss.
The legislation is only up for consultation, and I think one issue is that perhaps they've jumped a bit too quickly to legislation, rather than consulting with people who've just lived through a state of emergency to get an idea about what the priorities are. But if it went ahead as it is at the moment, the plan is that the Cabinet Office would be responsible for emergency powers legislation. So in the last emergency, it was the Lieutenant Governor on the binding advice of the Council of Ministers, so effectively it was COMIN. This legislation would change that from COMIN, which is responsible to the Keys, to the Cabinet Office.
On the experience of what we went through, did it work in the past, and is there a pressing need to change it?
I think it worked in some ways, and there's ways to identify improvements. Updating the 1936 legislation, which is what dealt with the last emergency, has been on the agenda for about 10 years. So obviously this is something that has been considered as suitable for review. I think what they should be looking at really is an update of the Manx EPA to reflect the Manx experience of the emergency, to reflect the special characteristics of the Isle of Man. And what the current proposal is doing is junking the EPA and replacing it with the current UK law. I think that's a short-sighted approach.
There were one or two errors that came up because there wasn't enough looking at it, in-depth looking at it by Tim Ward. Am I right in saying that?
I think that's fair. I mean, you have to make the point that the legislative drafters in the Isle of Man had an incredible challenge, which they rose to exceptionally well. But equally, if you read the discussions in Tim Ward where members of Tim Ward have gone through each of these pieces of legislation to approve them or reject them or amend them, you find a lot of errors being identified. And I'm unconvinced that there was a need for every single law to come into effect before it could be considered by Tim Ward. And so in my response to the consultation, what I'm suggesting is that be a possibility, but the default be that government creates the emergency powers, but they don't come into effect until Tim Ward approves them.
Can I just go back to the Emergency Powers Act of 1936? This was to deal with union discontent and with the possibility of strike action, wasn't it?
It was. It wasn't until the 1960s that it actually became possible to use it for a natural disaster like coronavirus. So the original legislation was definitely aimed at civil disturbances, strikes, unrest like that. But actually, with the 1960s modification, it became completely usable for a natural disaster, such as we've just experienced.
Is it necessary in an emergency to ameliorate democracy?
I think it can be. If you look around the world, pretty much every constitutional system has some sort of emergency powers regime. The difficulty comes when you end up in an ongoing emergency, so that the compromises which seem as appropriate in a time threatening the life of the nation become business as usual. And one of my worries about the Bill Act for Consultation is it doesn't clearly mark a difference between business as usual, the normal political life, the normal balance of powers, and the emergency powers regime. And I think one of the advantages of the current Manx law is that you do actually need to formally create a state of emergency in order to use these special powers. And that is something that people take very seriously, and it marks it as an unusual period.
Most people cynically would say the government will vote for something that gives them more power.
Well, I can see that, but bear in mind that Tynwald, I think, at least as much as Comyn, was responsible for the emergency ending when it ended. And our system does put a lot of emphasis on Tynwald. As a small democracy, it's very important that as many people as possible are engaged with these exceptional powers to exercise some sort of control over them. And I think actually the EPA emphasis, which I think should be increased, on decisions by Comyn being scrutinised by Tynwald is entirely appropriate. And it is a way of allowing swift emergency action while providing some element of control over it.
Just one.
I mean, I would just say that obviously, as a constitutional lawyer, I tend to worry more about controlling emergency powers than enabling them. But it's really easy to imagine a scenario where actually emergency powers are completely appropriate. Major radioactive release from a reactor blowing onto the Isle of Man, for instance, you may need to act very, very quickly. And that's the sort of time when emergency powers are definitely something you need to have in your arsenal.
The headline item is about the two ministers taking charge for 7 days. Should people be apprehensive about that?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's not in any way suggesting that any minister would abuse that power, but the nature of a constitutional system is you plan for the worst. You build in controls, you build in checks and balances to deal with the possibility of abuse. And, you know, if it is easy and expedient to govern in this way, people may be tempted to do it thinking it's for the best reasons. And actually, I think there needs to be a strong emphasis on accountability to Tynwald. And I think there needs to be a strong emphasis on the Council of Ministers as opposed to the Cabinet Office.
In your opinion, is this update necessary?
Yes, I think there does need to be an update to the EPA. I don't think adopting English models which have not been applied in the current emergency was the right approach. I think much better would be really thinking about the experience of the Isle of Man in 2020 and thinking about what worked and what didn't and improve the Manx law rather than adopt UK law.
That's super. I hope I've covered the ground that I should have covered. But
yeah, no.
Any areas where you feel that you'd like to say something?
Yeah, all I would say is that the bill is out for consultation. The consultation is open to the 2nd of October. People who have lived through the use of the EPA in 2020 should have views. So I think it's very important to respond to this consultation.
Professor Peter Edge there speaking to John Moss. Well, a commitment was given that this draft bill would be out for consultation, which it is, before being taken to the branches of Tynwald in October. The consultation started mid-August and has run for 6 weeks. Responses must be submitted no later than 5 on Friday, the 2nd of October. That's the end of this week. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. The Infrastructure Minister says he's committed to passing a new landlord registration bill by the end of this administration. Some property owners who rent in the private sector have criticised Tim Baker's department over a lack of direct consultation on the legislation. If approved by Tynwald, it would see the introduction of a register of all landlords, minimum standards for the sector and ongoing monitoring. The Manx Landlords Association, after it raised objections to the bill, claiming it's unfairly weighted in favour of tenants. He says the group's views will be considered. I spoke to him about the new bill.
we've had a formal consultation process which ran for the statutory period, the 6 weeks, and that's been analysed, and some amendments will be made to the draft bill to reflect various issues that were raised through that. And then we've got the three drop-in sessions. So we had the first one on Tuesday evening at Braddon, 4 till 7.30. We have another one this evening, Thursday, in St Paul's in Ramsey, and then one a week today in Port St Mary.
So have you met a happy landlord yet?
I've met people who were there on Tuesday who were far happier when they left than when they arrived, because there's been a lot of misunderstanding and I would suggest misinformation being put out around this topic. This was brought at the back end of the last administration and successfully kicked into the long grass because landlords clearly didn't want it. It was a landlord and tenant bill at that point. It's been in the department since then to work out what to do. We've brought it back. It's been rescoped. I think when you actually get into the detail, this is not the onerous legislative sledgehammer's cracker nut or draconian piece of legislation that some have portrayed it to be. The intention is to start to regularise and regulate this sector, to bring some transparency around who's letting out properties, because there is no regulation around that at the moment. So there could be vulnerable people living in accommodation with totally unsuitable landlords that would not pass a fit and proper test. There could be all sorts of behaviours going on. There's just no regulation around it.
So why didn't you, I just want to clarify, why didn't you invite the landlords as the body? They have the Manx Landlords Association. I appreciate you've already come out and said it's not a recognised industry body. Wouldn't it hurt to invite them to during the consultation period and heard those views and been able to work with them at that stage? Didn't you do it?
Okay, so what happened was the Manx Landlords Association, which mobilised around the previous bill, remobilised very much at the back end of that consultation period. And they did contact the department requesting that the consultation be extended and also to ask myself and officers to appear in front of their membership. Now, that was going to be a show trial. Experience from last time was that got quite heated and was not a constructive mechanism of engagement. What I have agreed to do, and I've confirmed this in writing to the committee of the Manx Landlords Association, and I reiterated it on Tuesday night, is to meet the Secretary-Treasurer and two other members of their committee face-to-face for a constructive professional discussion of what they see the issues are. I will listen and I will reflect on what they have to say.
So will that have a bearing on what's been changed as a result of the consultation, this meeting?
So some things have already been instructed back to the Attorney General's office to change. And of course, I am going to take note of what they've got to say. And I will hopefully look forward to a positive engagement and a constructive engagement. What I won't allow to happen is for this just to be kicked into long grass and kick it beyond the life of this administration, because if we do that, we'll be left with another several years of vulnerable tenants being left unprotected on this island.
The claim from the landlords is this doesn't cover the issue of how to deal with problem tenants. I mean, are you satisfied that's going to be dealt with in the changes you're going to make?
No, I would agree with the landlords that this doesn't. This is a very specific piece of legislation to start to put some regulation and transparency around the sector. What I would say to the landlords is there is a big opportunity here by engaging professionally around this and beyond. I think there's an opportunity to start for the landlord's profession to become a proper partner in this and try and take things forward, because I fully recognise there are lots and lots of good landlords on this island providing good accommodation, which is required by the community. Equally, there are some landlords where standards do fall short, where behaviours are not right, and where tenants are left exposed, and we have to address that. Mm. But you know, my background in DEFA, there's some really good engagement with the industry through a formal body, in that case largely through the Manx National Farmers Union, who input into policy and are a two-way conduit for ideas and feedback. And I'd love to see we get over a period of time to that situation in the rented property market. You know, there are professionals in the market, the agents, etc. There are some very, very good landlords. I would hope to be able to work together to lift the standards and to lift the overall game. So one of the comments that was made to me on Tuesday night was about how difficult it is to get rid of problem tenants. The court process is too slow. And I'm no expert on it, but I think that that's probably true. But I think by engaging with us and with the department, we can then try and get other changes made in government to respond to that.
Well, is the worry with that from a landlord's perspective is it's very well saying this legislation will come through and we'll have more legislation later to deal with some of the things you've mentioned there. I mean, this legislation alone has taken far too long, many would say. So what hope have they got that if it's not addressed in this bill, it's going to be addressed in future bills?
Well, I think we're starting a journey here. You've got to start somewhere. Yeah.
Well, this journey's been going on before this, though, hasn't it?
It's been going around in circles, hasn't it? It's not been going anywhere. You know, actually, one of my commitments is I want to get this legislation in. I want it to be fair and reasonable, but it isn't the answer in itself. There's more to come. So there's a lot of enabling pieces in here with further details to come. So there's talk of a deposit protection scheme. Now, I think that's an entirely reasonable thing. It's very accepted in other jurisdictions. It protects both parties. I think that's important. That's not for now. That's secondary legislation to come.
So to clarify, you're confident this is actually going to go through?
I hope so. I mean, it's down to the will of Timwald, but I think there are some very good reasons why it should go through. But it's going to be refined to reflect the analysis of the consultation document, the comments that have been made over these three drop-in sessions, and provided it's constructive, the feedback from the Manx Landlords Association. It was very interesting on Tuesday night that what started as some very confrontational conversations with me from landlords, there is actually quite a lot of common ground, and I would hope to build on that and take something through. But it is important that this goes through. And I think if landlords try and kick this into touch beyond the end of this administration, then I think that's not something I'm going to welcome.
I just wanted to ask you for comment, really, on the growth of the rental sector on the Isle of Man. I mean, it is a growing one. You're clear on the need for regulation here. Do you know why it's growing?
Crikey. I mean, I think the dynamics of the housing market are really interesting, but I think there's probably a number of factors. I think there are employers on the island who very much encourage, particularly in the e-gaming sector, I understand, encourage their employees to rent rather than to buy. I think there's also probably an element of younger people struggling to get onto the property ladder in the first place, and that they therefore need to rent perhaps whilst they save up.
Are house prices causing this?
I think house prices are all part of it. Yes, I mean one of my big concerns is the affordability factor, and you know you're looking at 9 or 10 times a typical level of income on the island for people to buy a house of reasonable standard, and that's a lot of money. I mean, okay, it's masked by the fact that interest rates are low, but it's a big strain on young families. So I think there's an element of that. I think it's probably an element of perhaps people not settling into families and having families a bit later. There may be that may be part of it as well.
I suppose the other question, is it a good thing that the island's rental sector is growing?
So I think there needs to be a healthy, well-managed, diverse rental sector on the island that provides a market solution for people at whatever rental point that they are. I think that's important. Not, you know, buying isn't for everybody. Some people want something short-term. Some people just don't particularly want to be tied down with a mortgage. It's not for everybody. So I think it's important that we have it. There must be an optimal sort of size for the island. What I worry about is that the properties are being bought by investors who are then pricing out ordinary hard-working Manx families from home ownership. And I think it is still an aspiration of many people to get the foot on the housing ladder. And I think we do need to be better policy-wise around that. And I think the debate around the integrated housing that came forward. From memory, it was July, maybe in June, Timwald shone a light into that area. And for me, the whole thing about housing is we need suitable housing for everybody. It needs to be affordable in the sense of fitting within people's budgets, and it needs to be accessible as well.
Should the DOI manage that or someone else?
I think it's broader than DOI. The DOI does a really good job in the social housing space, working alongside people like Douglas Corporation and the local authorities.
Is it right for DOI to have quite a few different housing functions? I mean, some people argue they should be separated.
Some people do argue that, and I'm pretty I'm pretty agnostic on that. I've obviously inherited the department in the shape that it is. Mm. There are some things that I'd be looking to reshape over time. There are things that are in there that perhaps are more of a legacy of where they've come from, and there are other things that perhaps aren't in the department that maybe should be. So I think over time that's something. But I'm certainly not fixated on that at all. And I think the most important thing is about outcomes for people. So it's having those decent homes at the right price, whether they're rented privately, whether they're rented from the public sector, or whether they're privately owned.
When you lay out the landscape, Dan, in terms of the rental market, there are big challenges. I mean, it's unregulated to an extent. It's in poor quality, a lot of it, according to a recent housing condition report. And more people are in it because, well, maybe they can't afford homes. So there's lots of strands here. How big of a priority is this for you? Because it seems to be a growing problem.
I think it is a key priority for the people of the island. I don't think it just sits with myself as DOI minister. I think it needs to be broader than that. And I know Minister for Policy and Reforms taking the lead on the broader housing work. I think it's something that's been perhaps a bit of a blind spot in the past in terms of government and policy. But part of it is chicken and egg, because it's not regulated, because there isn't the transparency. We don't know who the property owners are, where the rented property is. There's no real focal point. I'm sure
not enough data, basically.
There isn't enough data. There isn't an industry, a joined up industry as such. You know, I'm sure that government working more closely with a professional approach from the landlords and some of the support professionals, estate agents, Institute of Chartered Surveyors, etc. I'm sure we can collectively up the island's game in this front, and that's where I really want to go. And that's why this isn't about people throwing criticism and trying to kick progressive actions into the long grass. It's about working in a professional manner, recognising there is a need to do something, and to shape it up over time to get better outcomes.
Is the island's private housing market a poor relation of the social housing market? Because social housing is a known electoral issue in certain years.
You mean the private rent?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is government is obviously does do a lot with social housing. DOI administers a lot of that. It seems to prioritise the criteria for people being there, the standard. We unveiled new estates to a high carbon standard. At the same time, we're miles behind on the rental sector.
Yeah, and I think that's probably right. I think housing has often equated to social housing in government policy terms. I just think there's that gap, that vacuum, and that lack of transparency around it. I couldn't give you an accurate picture of number of houses, etc., how many people living in those sectors, what the rents are.
Yeah.
Whereas clearly on the public side, it's very, very clearly regulated. You know, we know what the rents are. It's transparent. We know who owns the property, and you can debate about who should be doing what. But actually, the infrastructure is all in there. So I think the short answer would be yes to your question. But yet, good housing is fundamental to people's life chances. And you'll probably remember the work I led on the accommodation for vulnerable young people with Mr. Collister and Mrs. Sharp as a committee, which we did some really useful work, which I think will lay a foundation for the long term around accommodation for vulnerable young people. And the things we uncovered in there are very informative of the wider picture.
That was Infrastructure Minister Tim Baker. Well, before we wrap up this edition of Agenda, just some background information that was provided as part of the consultation. And the Isle of Man 2011 census data indicated that around 16% of households on the island are in the private rental sector. It goes on to say, while a majority of those are likely to be people living in acceptable and appropriate housing with good landlord and tenant relationships, it says there are a number of private sector rented properties which are known to be in poor repair and do not achieve standards of basic decency. Well, since 2013, there has been a voluntary registration scheme, and this has developed into a register of over 131 landlords with 334 properties. But this falls well short of the anticipated total of private rented homes out there, meaning the true profile of the sector is unknown, something which may be remedied by the introduction of this legislation. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this edition online via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify. But for now, Gurumayu and goodbye.